Hey there, fellow travelers of the Jundland Wastes. Mark back here again for the Traveling the Jundland Waste podcast, the TJW podcast for August 31st, 2023. And I hope everybody had a wonderful Ahsoka Tuesday, or perhaps you had an Ahsoka Wednesday. If you haven't had Ahsoka Wednesday yet, you haven't seen the episode, part three called Time to Fly, now would be a good time to pause the podcast, go watch the episode, and then come back and listen to some of my thoughts here about this episode here. I made it in an Ahsoka Tuesday, and I watched it as soon as it hit the Disney Plus at 9 p.m. along with the fam. So, good episode, I thought. It was sort of like a reminder type of episode that you would see in the Clone Wars, or maybe even in Rebels, where you have almost, it felt a little bit like a standalone type of a story outside of the larger story, even though they are certainly touching points in the bigger story that's going to be taking place here in Ahsoka. It did have a little bit of a feel as sort of like an adventure of the week. Not completely, but because it was still touching on some of those points in the larger story. But still, I thought it was a good standalone episode in a sense. I had mentioned before on the podcast a couple episodes ago, and it might have been the last one I did with Dan, and I was talking about, I wonder if we're going to get to see any sort of Jedi training that Ahsoka and Sabine are going to be participating in. Are there going to be any sort of scenes that we're going to see of Ahsoka engaging in the training of Sabine? And boy, did we get an opening with that. I really liked this scene here on the on Ahsoka's ship, where she has this training studio. Actually, it looks more like than just a training, like a dojo or studio. It almost is like, you know, an all-purpose type room, because I think in the same room where they are training, it also converts into the cafeteria. Sort of reminds me how it was back in the old days when I was in elementary school, where the all-purpose room was the gym and the lunchroom. So who knows? Maybe that's where they were taking it from. And Sabine is shown here training with Hu Yang, the Ahsoka's droid here, which sort of reminded me a little bit of in The Force Unleashed, where Starkiller has Proxy helping him with his training, almost like the opposite. While Starkiller was training to be a Sith in The Force Unleashed, obviously Sabine is training to be what we think is a Jedi, or as Ahsoka mentions later on, maybe it's not a Jedi, maybe she's learning to how to become more of her own self, which is an interesting idea that we can get into at a later time. But they have Sabine here with Hu Yang and in this lightsaber training. Also reminded me a little bit of Luke and Obi-Wan, and I'm sure this reminds everybody of Luke and Obi-Wan Kenobi, or Ben Kenobi from Episode 4, when Luke is on the Millennium Falcon there with the lightsaber and the remote training, and Obi-Wan at the time sort of like is trying to teach Luke that you don't necessarily need your eyes to be able to fight, that that lightsaber skills and battling skills is not just about what you see, but about what you don't see as well. So Ahsoka does tell Sabine that the Mandalorian skills that she has are just not going to be enough for the challenge that they face with this encounter with Thrawn. So while she does have, like I said, those brute Mandalorian powers that she learned, Ahsoka wants her to go beyond that and be able to, in a sense, feel the Force and be able to battle, or be able to learn lightsaber skills that don't require her to see, but that sort of are based upon her feelings and her in-tuneness with the Force, which I think is a really interesting idea. She takes down that helmet with the blast shield and sticks it on her head, and just the same way as Luke said, I can't see, how am I supposed to fight? Reminded me also a little bit, not just of that scene, but if you go back and listen to the NPR radio dramas where that scene is played out in that radio drama, it goes into a little bit more depth than we see in the actual film on Episode 4, A New Hope. I suggest everybody go back and listen to it, because you get a little bit more instruction from Obi-Wan and a little bit more, I guess, of the ideas that surround, you know, learning how to use a lightsaber, learning how to fight with a sword with your eyes closed. Interesting idea. A lot of parallel to Luke and Obi-Wan. Ahsoka tells her, you know, you got to open your mind, you know, and you have to be able to have a deeper connection with the Force. On a funny note, Hu Yang says, like, you know, she is probably the worst Jedi candidate that he's ever had to deal with, which is sort of funny because sort of, like I said, it goes back and reminds me a little bit of, in this sense, of when Yoda is first meets Luke and is putting him through all that, you know, beginning training and pretends that he's not Yoda and he's trying to, like, you know, see what he's dealing with Luke Skywalker. And he's just like, this son of Skywalker is just not gonna do. And Hu Yang has, like, I guess, a similar feeling, like, you know, she's just not a good candidate to be a Jedi. But Ahsoka does tell him. She says that, I don't need her to be a Jedi. I need her to be her best self, which is a very interesting idea that I want to go back to. I really like the music also in this scene. I know Dan had mentioned in the previous episode that he was concerned with the fact that there wasn't all that, like, big score that you usually hear within a Star Wars story. Sort of the similar, you know, when you have that John Williams music playing in the background in the Star Wars movie, it really adds that extra dimension to it that makes you feel for the characters, in whether it's in a positive or negative way. Another item that I liked about this was that the music almost reminded me a little bit of maybe some of the music that I would hear while watching that original Karate Kid with Pat Morita. It's similar in the sense that, you know, that I think Mr. Miyagi in the Karate Kid is trying to basically teach Danielson that anger and frustration, you know, they're quick to get power. That's like almost like the methodology of Cobra Kai in the movie. But it imbalances you, and it doesn't make you a better, I guess, fighter or a better user of the Force in this sense. So she's trying to teach her to let go of that. And once you let go of the anger and the frustration, then you will find balance, and then you will be able to feel the Force more, and then will be able to help you, I guess, obey its command while at the same time follow your instincts as well too. So very interesting opening scene for Ahsoka this week. Show starts off that way, but then we go back to we see the big armada, the big New Republic armada out there in the middle of space somewhere. Hera meets through a Zoom call with members of the New Republic Council. We see Mon Mothma again, which is good to see. We haven't seen her since Andor. She asks Hera about Jason, who is the son of Hera and Kanan. Interesting that they call him Jason, as for any Expanded Universe fans out there, especially because we're talking about our podcast, which is, you know, based off of the, based off of discussions of the Expanded Universe. We know of Jason Solo and how his character moved along. He was sort of, I guess, like the prototype for Kylo Ren in the sequel trilogy, but that's for a discussion later on. We do get to meet Jason. He comes up and he meets with his mom. He asks, or he says, I have heard that, you know, Aunt Sabine is going to be trained to become a Jedi. And Hera's like, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens here. But in the discussion that Hera has with the New Republic Council, she does mention, she tells about the episodes, how they went to Corellia, how it was, while it's supposed to be, everybody's supposed to be there under, like, the New Republic banner, there are Imperial sympathizers there, and those who have Imperial, loyalty still. And she mentions the attack. She then mentions again about Thrawn, and she asks the New Republic Council for Task Force to go along so that they can investigate where Ahsoka and Sabine are heading, to see if there's any truth to where that hyperdrive piece was sent. You know, they took off, and wherever it ended up on that planet that we see at the end of the episode, Hera wants to have, you know, the Republic forces join them and be able to find Thrawn. But the Council doesn't seem to be too hot on this idea. They think Thrawn is no longer alive. They think that this is just a way for her to continue her search for Ezra. Both are true, but the question I have here is, I'm wondering, are any of these senators or any of these representatives on this council with Mon Mothma, are they Imperial sympathizers in any way? Is that the reason why they are not so hot on the idea of sending new Republic forces in to try to find Thrawn? It's sort of strange, because you figured that the New Republic has just defeated the evil Empire and that they would do anything in their power to make sure that any remnants of the Empire are gone. But they don't seem to feel that this is an important mission right now, and it's not exactly what they want Hera to be doing. I like how in the episode here, Hera, you know, makes reference to the fact that she did have an encounter with Thrawn, and actually was her prisoner for some time, and she knows how dangerous Thrawn can be. But still, even with that, they don't support this idea of sending this task force to find Thrawn or Ezra. They think it's a wild goose chase, and they're just not going to allow it. So Ahsoka and Sabine get a transmission from Hera, indicating at this time that they're going to get no New Republic support for this endeavor. There's a nice scene also here. Remember, I was telling you how they turned their their dojo into a lunchroom. We see the lunch table and the benches come out of the floor, and a nice scene also here with Ahsoka and Sabine as they're sitting down having coffee right now. She tells her that she's got to feel the Force, and she wants to tell Sabine, like, you know, you got to have patience, that this is going to take time. This isn't going to be an overnight type of a situation where all of a sudden she's going to be turning into the next Luke Skywalker. That's not how it's going to be. But she does tell her that she has to be able to feel the Force better. And she tries to illustrate this by moving the coffee cup from one side of the table to the next. Ahsoka shows how she did it. Reminds me a little bit about the stone that she floated towards Grogu in that episode in The Mandalorian. It also reminded me a little bit about the way that Ahsoka is talking here in this scene here. To me, it just has so many hints of how Obi-Wan and Yoda and even Qui-Gon, how they spoke to their apprentices, about how they have to be in the moment, how they have to feel the Force, how they have to just open themselves up to that. Once you open yourselves up to that, then everything else can fall into place. And the funny thing was, I was thinking as Ahsoka was showing Sabine how she can move the cup from one side of the table to the next, going back to my Mr. Miyagi reference here in The Karate Kid, sort of reminds me also of that scene in The Karate Kid where Mr. Miyagi is sitting in his dojo with a pair of chopsticks, and he's trying to catch a fly. And he says something along the lines to Daniel-san. He says, like, you know, they say anyone who can catch a fly with a pair of chopsticks can do anything. The scene goes on for a few more moments until all of a sudden Daniel-san is able to capture one of the flies with the chopsticks, and Mr. Miyagi says a funny thing like beginner's luck. But it reminded me a little bit about this scene here with Ahsoka and Sabine. And it also reminded me a little bit about a scene that you can read in the novel called Heir to the Jedi, which is part of the new Disney EU canon. In that book there, where Luke is, I believe Luke and is in this book here. And I recommend this book, Heir to the Jedi. It's a really one of my favorite books of the new canon here. It takes place in between, really close, right after episode 4. It takes place right after that, soon after the Death Star has been destroyed. But in this book here, Luke is on a mission, is accompanied by another character named Nakiri Kalin. This was also a good book, like I said, written by Kevin Hearn. Good one. If you want to get a nice book for the new canon, this is a good one to have. But I believe in this, on their mission there, as they're sitting down and they're having lunch together, and he has like a bowl of noodles, and he's trying to figure out how to move the Force. And I believe in one of the scenes, if I remember correctly, he is showing, he tries to use the Force to move or to make a noodle in his bowl float, or to move a noodle from outside the bowl back into the bowl. So he's got his bowl of ramen noodles there, and he tries to his best to use the Force to do it. Reminded me a little bit about this scene, that scene with Ahsoka and Sabine moving the cup. Very simple things that are trying to show the apprentice what they are capable of doing. It also reminded me a little bit about when Luke was unable to make the stone or the rock rise in The Empire Strikes Back there on Dagobah, and he gives up, and Yoda goes and says, it has nothing to do with size, it has nothing to do with brute strength, I'm going to show you something. And he goes and he's able to pull Luke's X-Wing out of the water and put it back on land, which was very classic scene for us OT fans as well, too. So they come out of hyperspace, and they see they find this planet along with this massive hyperspace ring that's being constructed there with these hyperdrives that we find later on. From there on, great space battle. If you really like a good Star Wars space battle, this was really cool. It reminded me of any great space battle that we see in any of the Star Wars movies. Reminded me of those points in the Knights of the Old Republic game where you had to get into the Ebon Hawk gun turret and try to destroy some of these fighters which are trying to get you. The hyperspace ring is pretty cool. That is an interesting object. We've seen it before in the prequel trilogy that Obi-Wan and Anakin both used those hyperspace rings on a very smaller level to take their small fighters from one end of the galaxy to another part of that galaxy here. But we learned that this hyperspace ring, at least according to Hu Yang, is bigger, larger than anything has been made. It has four or five hyperspace drives that it's being used. One is still being put into this device, but it is not yet complete. But we learn from this that they can go from not only one end of the galaxy to the other, but to different galaxies as well too. So perhaps this is going back to those ideas in the sequels, where we're talking about those unknown regions where the Imperial Remnant and the Sith have been hiding out. Is this where we're going to see a connection between the sequel trilogy and this series here? Or am I just going off and thinking that this isn't what they're talking about? I think it has something to do with the unknown regions, but we will just have to wait and see. They try to deal with Ahsoka's flying and Sabine's gun turret abilities. Long story short, they are able to eventually get some of those fighters off of their tail. But part of it also involves Ahsoka getting onto her spacesuit and jumping outside the ship, igniting her lightsabers and being able to knock another one of those fighters out to give Sabine enough time to repair the ship, to repair Hu Yang, to get it up and running so that they can get the ship moving again. And once they do that, Ahsoka is able to defeat, I think, one fighter. But at the same time, the two other characters, Shin and Maruk, are still flying around. They somehow manage to lose them, and Ahsoka and Sabine fly their ship into this planet. Don't know what this planet is. It certainly looks like one of the a new planet that we haven't seen before. Gave me feels of autumn as I see these trees with these red and maroon leaves on them. So who knows? Maybe this is a planet that is always in the autumn season. At the same time, I will also, when Ahsoka is out there on the ship, has her lightsabers out and is knocking off those laser beams and is trying to defeat those fighters. I know this because some people are going to probably sigh when they hear this. Had thoughts again of when Leia in The Last Jedi was blown out of her ship and is out there in the middle of space and has to use the Force to get herself back to the ship to keep herself alive. Part of me was always thinking, gosh, wouldn't that have been cool if after getting blown out of the ship, Leia had her lightsaber and had ignited it and was able to knock knock out some fighters attacking her and then fly back to the capital ship that she was commanding and be saved. But just like I said, just some thoughts that were going through my head when I saw Ahsoka out there battling. This was certainly much better than when we saw Leia moving around in space there in The Last Jedi. The escape, the music is great in this. Like I said, they play a lot of good music and soundtrack music in these scenes here, in these battle scenes, which is great. We get to see again the space whales, known as Purgles. I think they're Purgles. They do mention the fact that the last time that they saw these space whales was back when Ezra and Thrawn were taken by them and escaped into another galaxy. As I said, the hyperspace ring is not ready, but it is going to be operational soon. And according to Hu Yang, it'll probably be able to take somebody at great speed and great distances to other galaxies. So that's something that we got to keep in mind. I'm feeling that the other galaxy they're going to be going to using this hyperspace ring is going to be where Thrawn is. It's going to be where Ezra is. And I think that's where this story is leading. By the end of the episode, Ahsoka and Sabine are on the planet and they're hiding out until they can figure out what their next move is going to be. The show ends with Baylan and his troops on the planet. He senses both Ahsoka and Sabine on the planet, and he sends them out to basically knock them off. He was given his orders by Morgan herself, and she wants both of these. She wants Ahsoka and Sabine taken care of and out of the picture. So that's where the story ends. I thought it was a pretty good episode. I enjoyed it. It kept my interest right throughout. I love the references that were being made back to the story in Rebels. I really enjoyed the space battles that took place here. I especially enjoyed those moments between Ahsoka and Sabine discussing, you know, the ideas of the Force and how can we get Sabine to a level that by the time they encounter Thrawn or they encounter Baylan, that she's going to be able to feel the Force. And while she may not be a Jedi, or maybe, like I said, Ahsoka's saying, I'm not looking to make her a Jedi, I'm making her to be the best person that she can be, but she wants her to be the best person she could be by with the use of the Force and being able to help defeat Thrawn in this series here. So still a lot of questions open, but like I said, I thought it was an interesting episode. Like I said, especially like those scenes where Ahsoka and Sabine are talking about the Force and talking about her training. It was something I had mentioned, I think, in the previous episode that I wanted to, I mentioned with Dan that I wanted to see a little bit more of, and hopefully we're going to get a little bit more of some of those training scenes with Ahsoka and Sabine as well, too. But I think that's all for today on today's review of part 3 of the Ahsoka series. An interesting thing was when I turned on the episode that first time on Disney Plus, I don't think it had the name of the part when it came on. I think it just said part 3, but now I just noticed as I was re-looking at the episode that the name of the episode is Time to Fly, which is interesting because it reminds me a little bit that title reminds me a little bit of the song in the Rocky movies, which has like a similar title, like, no time, it's time to fly, and Rocky's training and you're hearing the Rocky theme. So maybe this is, you know, not only was it time to fly in those great space battles that we had in this episode, but it's also time for Sabine to be able to understand that she has this great ability and affinity for the Force, and all she has to do is open herself up to it, and she will be able to feel the Force and be able to help Ahsoka on this mission. If you have any thoughts about this episode or anything else that I spoke about in this podcast today, send me a message on my Facebook page. And the Facebook page is the Traveling the Jundland Waste Podcast Facebook page. Send me a message. I'd love to hear what you have to think, what you have to say about it, what you think about it. One other thing I should bring up as well, too. Hasbro Pulse, yesterday or the day before, had a small little reveal where a lot of the characters who we see in the Ahsoka series will be released for the Black Series, Vintage Series, and the Retro Series. So if you want to see some of those figures, they all look great, especially the ones of Morgan and Sabine. Those two really caught my interest, and I think I might have to add them to my Black Series 6-inch collection when they're released. I don't think they're going to be coming out until the end of the year, or maybe even the beginning of the year. So check those stores that you like to go to, or go to the Hasbro Pulse store, or you know, any of the brick and mortar stores, or Big Bad Toy Store. I'm sure pre-orders are up now for those figures. So if this series is really really pulling you, like it's pulling me, I think it's a good idea to pick up those figures for your collection. That is all for today. I hope everybody is having a wonderful, wonderful Thursday, and I will talk to you soon.